Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Facebook at ESPN Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
So the Sox and Cubs, both losers last night. The White Sox, heck, both teams still in first place, which is, you know, we've been able to say that for like 3 weeks, I think, now. They've been in first place teams. That's a nice thing to say as we progress through the month of June. Hanley and Huebner here on ESPN 1000. We're bringing our baseball guy, Jesse Rogers. Jesse, what's going on?
Good morning, guys. What's happening with you guys?
Well, are you out at the ballparks now, or are players avoiding you like they used to, or how's this all work now?
Well, I am at the park. They're not avoiding me yet, though. Not yet. I had a nice conversation with Kyle Hendricks yesterday in advance of the big crackdown on Monday. Not that it's going to affect him, of course. And then we talked about his start the night before in New York. So as of this moment, they're not avoiding me, but give it a couple weeks.
So what impact will this have? And, you know, I know before they even announced that they're going to be enforcing this more vigilantly starting next week, I know watching the Cubs broadcast, Jim Deshaies like, why'd they take that ball out of play? And he said, you know why? Because they're starting just randomly taking balls out of play to check them and see how prevalent it is. And that's weeks after they handed down those minor league suspensions. So how dramatic will it be when they start handing? Will we see a half a dozen suspensions next week, or has the message been delivered?
The message has definitely been delivered. You've heard players complain about it. I don't think we're going to see a half a dozen suspensions right away. I don't think so. Now, maybe as this thing moves along and it's not headline-making news daily, maybe pitchers will start to get a little, you know, brash and try to hide it in certain places. The umpires are on a conference call, I think as we speak, to get their marching orders. So we'll know in the next, you know, day or so exactly how this is going to go down. For example, I know some umpires are worried about, you know, they'd rather check guys before they go in rather than after. Like, guy gives up a walk-off home run, you want to check his glove. I know that's a concern of umpires. They'd rather check him before they go in, or solely before they go in. And they're also wondering, you know, how are we going to check them? Are we going to pull up their shirts? I mean, you know, yeah. What I mean, like, the glove and the hat is easy, but what else? How far do we go with this thing? So I think you've already heard pitchers, probably ones that aren't using anymore, like Tyler Glasnow, and it looks like Gerrit Cole's RPMs have come down. Like, they've already started the transition. So I'm not sure we're going to see a bunch of suspensions right away. And you're asking the impact. I think it's going to impact some teams a lot more than others. Kind of mentioned this before from the reporting I can tell you. I don't think it's going to impact the Cubs and Sox too much. Now, that doesn't mean all 14 pitchers on both teams aren't using anything. I mean, we know Kimbrel had that hat. I think there's a couple Cub relievers they're going to have to make adjustments. Same with Sox. But I think there's other teams that are going to be affected by this more.
Jesse, about a week or so ago, Peter Alonso talked about it, saying, I'm happy the pitchers have it because they're throwing so hard and it's hard to control the ball, and I'm glad they're using it because I don't want to get hit. But I know you've talked about it and posted about it. The hit by pitch is higher now than it's ever been. So, I mean, if they've been using it and they're still hitting guys, I mean, I don't understand the whole premise of using it because you can grip it better and you're still throwing and hitting guys.
Well, let's see. Maybe it goes up even more, which would be dangerous, right? The problem is pitchers in midseason don't know how to scale back. In other words, Tyler Glasnow is throwing 100 miles an hour, gripping the ball really hard. No wonder he got hurt. So I think the adjustment is some of these guys are going to have to scale back a little bit. And all of a sudden, not everyone's going to be able to throw 98. You have to grip it differently. Maybe you have to throw 92 now. This is where more offense might come back and possibly more control. And so I guess what I'm saying is, if they continue to throw 100 without the sticky stuff, watch out, hitters. So I would hope that pitchers would make the adjustment on their own, because it also affects their game and stuff. Plus, I know they don't want to hurt hitters. So, yeah, I mean, it's just weird to be doing this midseason, as many pitchers have said. I just wonder if hit by pitches are going to go up even higher, or our velocity number is going to come down, or both.
Jason Hayward came out and said he also is unvaccinated, but you look at his numbers and he's back to being the Jason Hayward we all fretted about, you know, a few years ago. And then it looked like he was going to start contributing at least much more, relatively speaking. which Jason Hayward are we going to see moving forward? Is he reverting back to a guy who's just going to be great in the field, and whatever you get from him at the plate, you just say, oh, well, we got a little something, but don't expect much.
Yeah, this is a dilemma for David Ross as they get healthy, hopefully with Matt Duffy and Nico Horner, two guys who make a lot of contact, which is missing right now in this lineup. You see Wisdom's come back down to earth, Alcantara a little bit as well. I mean, Happ and Hayward are not performing, and no, those are veteran players, right? So, and remember, Hayward's, you know, aging a little bit in right field. He's not necessarily a Gold Glove winner in the making this year. So there's some tough decisions by David Ross at this point. You know, Happ will run into a home run once in a while, but that's about it these days. And we haven't really seen that out of Hayward lately. I think he is what he is, right? I think the exception to Jason Hayward were the times where he was, you know, hot or had that one okay season or whatnot, right? I think those are the exception. I think the rule is kind of what we've seen since he signed here. Perhaps not this bad, under 200.
Yeah, this is bad.
Yeah, this is the David Ross has talked about this, and I don't think he's committed to Jason Hayward starting every day. I also don't think he's committed to sitting him on the bench for the next 3 months. Remember, he has 2 years left, so it's a lot of layers to the Jason Hayward story. But if he's trying to win games, if he has other options, he's going to have to go to him more often than not.
Jesse, you also brought up the point on Twitter, and I know that the Cubs scored two runs yesterday, Jack Peterson with homers, but that's five straight games now where the only way they got homers is – I mean, I'm sorry, the other way they got runs is hitting home runs.
Right.
And it was funny, Tony La Russa said something the other day about Yermín Mercedes, and he said maybe Mercedes should watch the Astros take batting practice because you've got guys, and during their BP, they're spraying the ball all over the field. When you watch BP, do you see a similar thing where they're just trying to jack the ball and see how far they're hitting it, or do people actually work on their game when they're in the batting cages?
Depends on the day. Some days you see a guy just jacking it. Other days you see a guy spraying it to all fields. I mean, that's kind of what I can tell you just anecdotally. It's not like I watch every minute of every batting practice. But you see both. I think guys that are struggling tend to work on it more at BP. Guys that are going well might just start swinging for the fences because they know they're in a good groove. So I do think guys work on it if they are struggling during batting practice, or at least a lot of them do. Maybe not all of them. Maybe Mercedes has never been a guy that's done that.
Right.
And maybe he should. But yeah, the Cubs are in a little bit of a rut now, as I mentioned, with Wisdom coming back down and a couple other guys without Duffy, without Horner in there. They're in this home run thing. And I was a little disappointed in Ross last night. I asked him after the game his take on five straight games of only hitting home runs. That's tied to the longest streak for the Cubs since 1961. And he said, oh, I'm not worried about that. As long as we win, I don't care how we score. Of course, that's the case if you are winning. But these last five games, you're 1-4 with this home run thing, home run or nothing thing. I wondered if the approach needs to be tweaked or whatnot. But here's also what I've learned in watching the Cubs over these last few years. If you are that free swinger, that's who you are. If you are a contact hitter, that's who you are. And Theo and Jed put together a free swinging group. And the one time it changed was earlier this year when Duffy and Horner were in the lineup. So without them in the lineup, it's reverted back to who they are. Happ, Hayward, all these other guys. Even Wisdom when he's not going well. Wisdom is a free swinger, strikeout kind of guy. That's who they are. They transformed themselves for a long period with Duffy and Horner in there and then got a hot streak out of Wisdom and Alcantara. But that's not there in it right now. So the transformation has to continue past this year. Let me tell you something. I could do 20 minutes on this. I think the game is going to change. I think Nico Horner, if you had eight Nico Horners in coming years, I think you'd be set. Like 30 home run hitters, that's great. What else do you do the other 570 plate appearances? I think the game's going to come back. The rules are going to make it that way, and the roster construction, all this stuff, I think is going to transform the game back to the contact hitters. It's going to take a little more time. It's also why I think the new CBA is going to address this a little bit. And Jed having kind of a blank slate moving forward is probably a good thing. And if he doesn't re-sign the sluggers, well, then he can remake the roster in what the future of baseball is going to look like.
Given the Cubs' struggles, I'm still surprised they have a game lead in the division. But, of course, Milwaukee's lost five in a row. Cincinnati's lost a couple in a row. But obviously the streakiest team in the division. Is it a 2 or 3 team race? I mean, do we still continue to think the Cardinals are at 500 are going to be a team that has to be dealt with moving forward? Which team should the Cubs be leery of the most?
No, I still think it's Milwaukee. I don't think Cincinnati and now St. Louis have staying power. I give the Cardinals credit. They will battle, but they you know, Flaherty's injury is huge. Their bullpen's a mess. I just don't know if – their offense isn't even that great. I don't know if the Cardinals can fix themselves, and that's the team I picked to win the division. But the Flaherty injury, I mean, they lost their ace, and he's gone for a long time. And they have other injuries on the pitching staff. I think it is Milwaukee, but I'll tell you what, starting Monday, it might look different. And for all we know, look, the Brewers just lost in Colorado, so you take that with a grain of salt. But still, Colorado's bad, and they lost starts by Woodruff and Burns in advance of this crackdown on Monday. And I'm just saying, things may change all over the place come Monday. And there are certain teams, as I mentioned before, that may be impacted more than others. So on paper, I think it's a two-man race. Maybe I'm not giving enough credit to Cincinnati. I just don't think they have enough past Winker and Castellanos on offense, and I don't think they have enough on the mound either. But look, it's tight. Anything can happen. The crackdown, the trade deadline, there's so many variables. But if you ask me on paper, I still like the Milwaukee Brewers.
Jesse, appreciate it as always. Have a good one. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Take care, guys. See ya.
Jesse Rogers joining us here on ESPN 1000. Brian, he mentioned the Rockies beating both of the pitchers for the Brewers.
Yeah.
I'm looking here, and I was watching MLB Central the other day. The Rockies, and we all know it, their home field advantage, Coors Field, everything else. We always talk so much about it. Tough for pitchers to go there and then, you know, for their curveball stuff and any of their off-speed stuff. They're 30-41. They're 11 games under 500. They're 25-14 at home. They're 5-27 on the road.
Amazing. And whenever, you know, you would try to go, if you wanted to trade for one of their pitchers or sign them as a free agent, you're like, buyer beware. Because those numbers, you know, it could be the guy was hindered by that stadium and the altitude, or you have really no idea what he actually looks like over 162 when he's not playing half his starts there.
I'm looking at it right now. Tom Glavine went there at the end of his career, didn't he? What is it? One of the Braves pitchers. No, it wasn't him. One of the really good pitchers went there, and then I don't think we heard from him again.
It was time to retire because
Actually, Glavine went to the Mets and then back to Atlanta. 22 years Tom Glavine pitched. Boy, when you got to plate this 23 inches, I guess you can do that.
That's a lot of sunscreen.
There's no doubt. White Sox fans, I want to know what you want to do with the Yerminator. Yermin Mercedes was a great story. Unbelievable. Comes out of the box with 8 straight hits to start the season. Right now, he's been in the 5 spot as the designated hitter, hitting after Abreu. And maybe Abreu's not getting the pitches anymore because Mercedes hasn't been hitting anymore. Last night, we saw Grandal as the DH and Collins as the catcher. Sox fans, I want to know what you think you should do and what Tony La Russa should do with Yermin Mercedes. 312-332-3776. We'll talk more about Garrett Cole and he's having a hard time holding the ball. Oh my God, I was tearing up. I really was. We'll talk about that
last night.
No, not at all. We'll talk about that and much more. Get to your calls 312-332-3776 here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
So the White Sox lose last night to Houston, lose a couple in a row, and the Astros only had 5 hits because Rodon was good. 7 innings, 3 hits, a run. He walked 3, struck out 8, and went 106 pitches. ERA goes down to 1.83. The White Sox had 7 hits, but they struck out 13 times yesterday, and they were striking out a lot in the first game of this series, and there was no Yermin Mercedes in the lineup yesterday. Usually he's hitting 5th, Brian, and they had Grandal DHing. He went 0-for-3 and struck out twice. And then Collins was catching, and he went 1-for-4 and struck out 3 times. So those two guys combined on five strikeouts. So I guess that wasn't working either yesterday. But the thing with Mercedes, in May, he hit 221, his slash, 221, 292, 326. Mm-hmm. And in June, his last 16 games, 6 for 56, no homers, 5 RBIs.
Which is why Tony La Russa indicated that, you know, basically, I think, paraphrasing, he said, well, who knows, you know, he could sustain this, or it might surprise us, that basically Tony wasn't expecting him to obviously keep up putting up the numbers he did in the first couple of weeks.
Right.
But did you expect him to fall back to earth in such a huge way? And, you know, you mentioned Grandal. Given what the expectations for Grandal were when he signed with the White Sox and going into the season, versus no one even knew who Mercedes was, who's the bigger concern here as they kind of scuffle along offensively in particular? Grandal, because you expect him to be a big part of whatever postseason you attain, not only this season, but moving forward? Or is it Mercedes, because you thought he could be a big part of this offense, maybe not historically the numbers you put up early on, but you expect more from him than what he's given you certainly in the last 3 weeks?
Yeah. There's no doubt. 312-332-3776. When the Sun-Times prints the Cubs and Sox statistics and every day, and I always print them up when I'm sitting here doing a show on Saturday and Sunday, and I'm looking for Grandal, and I see, oh, I'm going down.
I know,
oh,
right?
He's the last guy. He's got the lowest average of anybody on the team at 153. His on-base is 383 because he's walked so many times. He's walked 54 times.
Struck out 54 times, too.
Yes, he has. Yeah, he's an equal opportunity at the plate. With 10 homers and 24 runs batted in. And, yeah, and we had a caller earlier who talked about McCann, and I know a lot of people said, well, you can't do that. You know, you've got Grandal. He's making a lot of money, this, and this. That's what aggravated me so much about the whole damn framing stat. But every time Mercedes is at the plate, if you're watching the game on TV, it's almost like they're breaking down every single at bat, because Stone will tell you he's not lifting his leg up anymore. He will not let pitches go. He's going to swing at everything because he's so worried about striking out. He's not going to take a pitch to strike out. He'll swing at balls, you know, with two strikes, he'll swing at balls out of the strike zone and foul them off, and where if he lets them go, maybe, you know, so he's got to be all in his head now too, because look how quickly he went from a 28-year-old guy that nobody knew who he was,
right,
to all of a sudden the Urminator, and he's got it in his head and everything.
And Urminators, I mean,
literally
don't walk,
in his
right?
head, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Urminators don't get, you know, take a base on balls. And
no.
He's probably somewhere thinking, maybe not even the back of his mind, more to the forefront of his mind, if I don't start hitting the ball out of the ballpark, I'm going to be heading back to wherever, and it won't, you know, I won't be the Urminator anymore. I'll be back to being a journeyman in the minor leagues.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's got 18 walks and 44 strikeouts this year. His 7 homers, 34 RBIs. That was nice when it was happening. But let me see here. And it doesn't help, you know, they talk about, well, Adam Eaton's out now. That could be a godsend. He was 140. He was hitting 147 with 2 yeah. homers in his last 34 games. So he's been really tough. So they've been winning without putting up a lot of runs from a lot of guys.
And they were also winning early on without being a team that hit home runs, right?
Right. They're still near the bottom in baseball
right.
of home runs. So,
right. So I mean, you're finding a way. And I know Steve Greenberg, our buddy, had a nice piece about whatever you think about Tony La Russa, and people obviously have pretty emotional thoughts or passionate thoughts about him, about the last, you know, St. Louis Cardinals team he had, with all the adversity they faced with injury and everything else. It was a tough minded team. And basically, is this all the injuries the White Sox have suffered through and whatever, are they similarly tough-minded? Would that be enough to get you through to a postseason until everyone gets healthy?
And you were talking, I think it was you that was questioning me earlier. It might have been, was it this year? This year's gone so long. We're not even at the All-Star break. But, you know, I still think, and when the Cubs won, a lot of people said they did it a year early. And I was thinking this was a year early for the White Sox. And then when the guys got hurt, I kind of said, okay, you might win the division, but I don't necessarily think this year you're going to win it all. But then
I was the guy who said, really? You're giving up already? It was still April, I think.
Yeah, it was.
About this.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily that I'm giving up, but you've got Kopech and Garrett Crochet. You got those two guys. And you also have Keuchel and Lynn, who you're not sure what's going to happen in the future, if they're going to be here the following year. So I understand what you've got. You know, every year you want to try to win. I mean, Sylvie asked Jed Hoyer the other day, is your goal to win the World Series? Well, anybody that's playing, any general manager that says no, should be fired probably.
We'll get roasted.
Yeah, he would. So, you know, he said all the right things. But, the more I think about it, I'm not sure what kind of position they need for – you know, when it does come trading deadline time, do they need another guy that can catch? They have Grandal. So they're going to live and die with him, apparently. Do they have to look for another DH? You know, Michael Brantley looked really nice the other day, hitting that home run in the first inning off, you know, when the White Sox had Adam Eaton on the injured list. I didn't quite understand that, why they didn't, you know, try to get him or go after him, or if maybe they did and it just didn't work out. But, they've been doing all this with pitching. You know, their pitching is so good right now. I'm looking
so
here.
So good.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I had it written down here. Their pitching is so good. They lose Andrew Vaughn a little bit last night. He slides to the second base, gets a ball off his face.
Ouch.
Yeah, and this hurts. After he makes a really nice catch. So they're getting guys stepping up. But with Yermín Mercedes struggling, he was such a big reason for their early season success. And now I'm interested to see how it's going to play out going forward, because you brought up a great point, because La Russa didn't get overboard, because he'd seen this before in his many years as a manager. You'll get a guy who in April is going to just take off. And it's difficult for guys that are not established ball players to do that and then stay hot. And as Jesse was saying, you see Patrick Wisdom on the other side. You're getting his burst of home runs and comes down to earth a little bit. Same with Alcantara and things like that. So it's very difficult, I think, for White Sox fans, because, you know, you'd love to see this kid do well, but also you can't expect it from a 28-year-old. Because, again, there's a reason he hasn't been in the major leagues. There's not a lot of guys that get to the big leagues at 28, 29, and then stick around for a while because it's like everybody made a mistake on him. You know,
well, and they announced themselves the way he did in historic fashion, right?
Yeah.
My guess is Rick Hahn, and he talked about it really immediately after, you know, they're wondering if you have enough at second base. You know, he basically said teams know what we need and what we're going to be looking for, and we're not going to panic. You don't want to be out there desperate, because teams are figuring you're desperate enough. You don't want to really show that. But my guess is he's going to be more aggressive than not as you get closer to the trade deadline. Because he looks and says, okay, we're still four games up. But just like Mercedes, can you sustain winning and keeping that cushion when you have all these holes to fill and each and every night not knowing where the runs are going to come from, right?
Yeah.
You're going to need to get more proven hitters to add to this equation until you start getting healthy again.
Yeah, and it was funny. I agreed with Jesse. You know, I understand David Ross says, no, homers are great. As long as we win, everything's good. Well, you're 1-4 over the last five games when all you have is home runs getting, you know.
1961. Now, think about that.
I know.
Last time that they only scored by home runs in five-game stretch.
Yeah.
1961. That's a long time.
Even I wasn't watching baseball at that point. Even I wasn't. Well, I mentioned this a couple times. Let's play it before we go to break and then see if anybody else has opinions on it, because I'm listening to Garrett Cole the other day, and I thought this all started really when they asked Garrett Cole if he had ever used what's the stuff called, Spider Tech?
Yeah, Spider Tech.
So, and then it started with his, you know, 6-second pregnant pause, and then going on and saying a lot of things have come to baseball and been handed down and all that stuff. So the other day he was asked about gripping the baseball.
It's hard. I mean, it's hard to explain. It's so hard to grip the ball. I just, you know, I mean, for Pete's sake, it's part of the reason why almost every player on the field has something, regardless if they're a pitcher or not, to help them control the ball. I think certainly the intent, I agree with. Uniformity, I agree with. I would encourage the commissioner's office to continue to talk with us, please, because we're the ones that throw the ball. They don't. And, we're the experts in this situation, and we're aligned in terms of intent with the commissioner's office as well.
Is it just me that there's a lot less, you know, when you were covering baseball, there were a lot of guys with blister problems, okay?
Yes.
Because they would grip the ball would slide off the, you know, the seams would hit their fingers, they'd be out for a while with blisters. I know Al Zelay had it earlier this year. Maybe Al Zelay's not experienced enough to use some of the spider tech, so he's got to put more pressure on the ball and, you know, comes up with a blister instead. It seemed like that was a problem that happened a lot more back in the day because they gripped the ball.
Some seasons they were complaining that the seams were raised, and other times they were as smooth as the rest of the baseball. And then this week I heard a couple pitchers saying, you know, we talked about this last week. Do they still rub up baseballs with the mud from New Jersey?
Yeah.
Well, some pitchers said some places do and some places don't. So there's uniformity. Okay, I can agree with Garrett Cole if that's in that in fact is the case, that MLB doesn't tell the umpire who's behind the plate like he used to rub up the – but then eventually clubhouse kids got the job. But when the umpire's got a union. But, you know, 6 dozen, 7 dozen, 8 dozen baseballs have to be rubbed up. But I don't understand why some places would do it and some places don't do it. How's that allowed, right?
Yeah.
There should be uniformity there.
Sure, there should. And the whole thing, when I just heard him say it, it's like, you know, whatever happened, I guess, you know, the way people are telling us this, we've been watching baseball our entire lives, not realizing that pitchers for decades have been using something other than just the rosin bag to keep control of the baseball. And, you know, he says that, you know, players at all positions are using something to grip the ball. And, you know, I'm sorry, when you were growing up playing ball, did you know any of that stuff? Or do you have to get to a higher level in order to be introduced to spider tack and stuff to, you know, to grip the ball better?
Yeah, I mean, he's talking about it being handed down by generations of pitchers.
Yeah.
Like, here's my toolkit, kid. I'm not going to need it anymore. You can inherit this stuff. And we all think about Leslie Nielsen as the umpire in Naked Gun going out there and, you know, frisking the guy and every possible tool out of the shed falls out of his uniform. Nothing to see here. As Jesse said, it'll be very interesting because Garrett Cole was called out by Josh Donaldson immediately.
Right.
When there was speculation about this. And within the next 10 days, next two or three starts, his spin rate went down appreciably. And then they put up a list of like half a dozen guys, including Clayton Kershaw, that the spin rate really went down when they started the suspensions in the minor leagues. So it will be a brand new day if, in fact, Major League Baseball follows through on Monday and starts again. I don't think 10 games is enough, but it's a start. But I think if you're going to do it, you should really crack down in a much bigger way than two starts.
Okay. The other thing is, okay, in his last outing, he faced Toronto, a team that can hit the hell out of the ball.
Right.
At that small place they were playing at in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Garrett Cole went 8 innings, allowed 4 hits. He struck out only 2. I'm sorry. He struck out 4, walked 1. He seemed to not have that much of a problem controlling the baseball. So, I don't know. I think it can be done. Everything can be easier. But, you know, baseball's not supposed to be an easy game.
No.
No.
There's a reason you got paid the money the Yankees paid you. And, you know, if it was basically because you're a doctor in the ball, then shame on you. But obviously he's got talent. And there was, on that list of 6, 7, 8 guys immediately after those suspensions in the minor leagues, even though their spin rates went down appreciably, they were still not allowing any runs or one run.
Right.
Yeah. They were still getting the job done. It was just they had to figure out a different way to do it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
I don't know. 312-332-3776. Your thoughts on that. We'll also get back into the Soldier Field situation and the Bears moving. I've got an opinion that probably no one's going to agree with. But
can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, that's not surprising. 312-332-3776. Huebner and Hanley here on ESPN 1000.
ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter. At ESPN 1000.
So earlier in the week, the Bears put out the announcement that they've made a bid to purchase Arlington International Racecourse. And a lot of Bears fans got excited right away. And we've talked about it a little bit. Take your calls at 312-332-3776. I don't quite understand where everybody in town became an architectural, you know, in love with architecture. I'm looking at a guy named James on Twitter got to me. And I appreciate all the people who get to me on Twitter. You can get to me and Brian. You get to me at Fred_Huebner and Brian at Brian Hanley 534. He says, They truly messed up the renovation of Soldier Field. Should have made a retractable dome with more seats. I agree with that. But then he says the spaceship is one of the ugliest designs ever. Okay. I never understood that, because who cares what a building looks like on the outside? Once you're in Soldier Field, and I'm not talking about the concourses or anything else like that, it's a big stadium with seats. Okay. The seats aren't going to be improved. They're still going to be seats. I just don't understand somebody being, well, it's so ugly on the outside. Who cares? I don't understand where that comes in. And that's not even the thought I had. I just came up with this when I saw this, because people have said for years, oh, the spaceship, it looks like they just put a spaceship inside of Old Soldier Field. I don't know why that bothers people. And people are going to say, well, why does us thinking that bother you? Who knows? Because I'm crazy. That's why. But
look at the Thompson Center, and it's named after a dope, so who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, that's right in the middle of the city.
Right.
And it was celebrated because of one of the world's great architects came up with it. It's an uglier than you know what building,
yeah.
Inside or outside, but certainly. And it turned out to be didn't function very well. The you couldn't heat the place, you couldn't cool the place, because it was all about design and didn't really function well. But moving forward here, and that was the coach 1122. After the coach 1122 said that the spaceship is one of the ugliest designs ever. Uh-huh. This idea that they're in negotiations with the city to I assume renovate, right? Because no one's talking about building from scratch.
No.
A new stadium. Again, you know, Tom Ricketts wanted a lot of money from Rahm Emanuel and Springfield, and, you know, he got shut down before the conversation even got started, because the city can't afford it. Just simply can't. So Lori Lightfoot put out her statement immediately saying, you know, why don't you worry about winning and doing something past October,
right?
Which is nice. As a sports fan, she's got thoughts, but she's got much bigger things to worry about. This whole idea of corporate welfare to the tune of $500 million, or, you know, Mayor Daley at the time said the public wouldn't be on the hook for any of this stuff, right? It'd be because the first renovation was backed by the hotel tax, right?
Uh-huh, right.
State hotel tax, which is exorbitant, but the thinking is it's paid 98% of the time by out-of-towners, conventioneers, blah, blah, blah. So it doesn't impact Chicagoans, right?
Sure.
But if that tax money doesn't meet the needs to pay off the bonds, well, then it is on the taxpayers of the city and the state to the tune of $432 million. And again, those bonds don't get paid off till 2030. And the cost of the renovation from 2001, 2003, $1.2 billion, and that's what you got. You can't put a retractable roof on that stadium. You can't put more seats in there.
Right.
So the idea of renovating 2.0, renovation 2.0 Soldier Field, it's a non-starter probably for the league and the Bears. I mean, it's the smallest venue in the league. And it is about being a multi-use stadium. It is about Final Fours. It is about Super Bowls. It is about a retractable roof. It is about another 30,000 seats minimum. And you can't do that in that footprint. So, again, if you can't settle in on the Lucas Museum in a parking lot, you tell me where on the lakefront you're going to put a brand new stadium, who's going to pay for it? The answer is nowhere and nobody.
Yeah. But here's the thing, and you just brought it up too, and this was my original idea and thought. People always say, if you get a bigger stadium, you can have Super Bowls. If you get a bigger stadium, you can have NCAA tournaments. If you have a bigger stadium, retractable roof. The only thing I agree with that on is a retractable roof. So people can then come into a ballpark, a football stadium, and be comfortable while they're watching a game, hopefully in December, hopefully in January, and when they're in the playoffs, and can be a game played on a fair, you know, situation where you don't lose because of a slip. I don't understand the whole thing is, it would be great to get a Super Bowl here. How many people are going to go to the Super Bowl? 30,000? 10,000? Because when one of those events happens, it's all the rest of the, you know what I'm saying? The rest
it's papered,
of
it's papered with the corporate sponsors
and team and players from all the other teams
get
all the
tickets and all tickets. That
stuff. It's but not like if you had tickets for the Bears, you're going to get your Super Bowl tickets. Okay,
well, it's about the influx of money into the city. And
but do people care? Is that why people care that the city will make more money? I don't think so. I don't understand why people care if they get a Super Bowl or if they get an NCAA tournament. How many people are going to get tickets for that? You're going to talk about 20 or 30,000 maybe of all the people that live in the city?
And you are basically guaranteed. You get a new stadium built, the NFL rewards you within 5 or 6 years of the stadium opening with said Super Bowl, as long as you have a indoor stadium.
Even Minnesota's had Super Bowls. Pontiac had Super Bowls when they were at the Silverdome.
And Mark Potash held up the Minnesota Stadium as a game changer because it's indoors with enough natural light coming in. It feels like you're outdoors.
Right.
But you have all the creature comforts. I get all that. But you could also have huge concerts for bands that could sell out stadiums like Soldier Field, right?
I mean,
there are other events and other things you could do. It is a tough, tough sell in this climate with people being squeezed every which way. You know, every few years they want to raise the income tax here in the state. Property taxes go up because of the pensions going up.
Right.
No one wants to change that because they're just not going to. So eventually people are going to vote with their feet, move out of the city, move out of the state. And that's been going on at a historically high rate for 5, 6, 7 years now. It's going to only increase. At some point, you can't do everything and talk about how poor you are and how you can't afford this, that, and the other. And we're going to close corporate loopholes in terms of tax relief. And then say, here's $1 billion or $500 million in tax money. Go build yourself a new stadium, even if it's not on the lakefront, right? It's just... And they can't even agree on to this point where to put a Chicago casino. Oh,
right.
No one will go in that neighborhood. Oh, that neighborhood doesn't need it. You know, we need a downtown for the tourists and the conventioners. No, we don't. We need, you know, who knows? But I mean, it might take, if people say it's going to take 10 years to build out Arlington Heights. I don't think it would take 10 years.
Right.
It might take a year for the actual real estate deal to close. But once you break ground, that thing could go pretty quickly, you know, weather permitting. And the train line's there. That's not going anywhere. The parking lots are there that you don't need to, you know, do anything that. And there's a hotel there. You know, visiting teams could stay right there. Or the Bears could stay there the eve of the home games like they do downtown. There's a lot of infrastructure there that you wouldn't need to change. But maybe just a refresher update a little bit. One of our people tweeted us that he thinks it's both, Don Holyfield. He said, I think they would leave if they could, but he may be also a negotiating ploy. As far as the negotiations go, I just don't know what they're negotiating. Because, again, you can't do much more to Soldier Field than you've already done.
Right.
It will not increase the capacity appreciably, and it won't change the fact that it's an outdoor stadium. So I don't know if they're asking the city to build them a brand new or help build them a brand new spanking stadium like they have in Vegas and in L.A. And to me, that's a completely non-starter, because imagine the governor of the state or the mayor of the city with all the issues going on saying, oh, by the way, you know, we found money, you know, to after begging Washington to bail out the state because of the pandemic.
We found money to build a stadium.
Yeah, here's $1 billion because we can't lose 10 home dates for the Bears.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't – the climate doesn't allow for that. But I think they're more serious about it than they've ever been. I think it makes a hell of a lot of sense. And as much as they've been a mom-and-pop organization and criticized for being run like a small business when the rest of the league has moved on, I think they're trying to change that. I think you've seen it with the Halas Hall renovations. And they're trying to bring in new people and you know, shake things up a little bit. But I don't think it would take 10 years. And I think they're serious about changing their lot in life and not being the smallest venue in the league.
Callers hanging there. We'll get right to you. We also got to hear from Dan Wiederer. He joined the Waddle and Sylvie show the other day talking about some of the benefits and also about the Bears potentially moving out to Arlington Heights. We'll take your calls and thoughts. 312-332-3776 here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Facebook at ESPN Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
We'll take your calls. We'll talk and listen, actually. Dan Wiederer was on earlier this week with Waddle and Sylvie talking about the whole situation of the Bears potentially moving out to Arlington Heights. And Brian, I went through this a couple years ago because when the Chicago Fire announced they were going to move back to Soldier Field, I think the only way I can relate it, I was sitting here thinking during a commercial break, I live in Downers Grove, so I loved where they played over on 71st at Harlem. It took me 15, 20 minutes coming to the back door. Real easy to get to, easy to get out of. Not a problem. People were complaining because there wasn't a good public transportation. That is one reason. Other people were saying, oh, I can't believe I got to drive all the way out to the burbs. It's 15 minutes. Okay, granted, on a weeknight, it's going to take you longer because of traffic. But now the Bears are going to move out of town to Arlington Heights. It's still, for people living on the south side of the city, pack a lunch, okay? I live in Downers Grove. It takes me a long time still to get to Arlington Heights.
But I said, if you live in the city, and first of all, my guess is, I don't know the exact numbers.
How many Bears fans are in the city?
Their season ticket base,
right.
I guarantee you, the majority are in the suburbs, right?
Yeah.
Not in the city proper. But even if you are in a nearby suburb, Oak Park or Evanston or whatever, and you want to make your way to Soldier Field, okay, if you have to park in a city garage or whatever and take a bus, that's a hassle. If you're, park and then you're going to walk 2 miles, as one of our callers said, across the museum campus.
Right.
If you have a tailgate spot near the stadium, that's terrific. And maybe you tailgate so long that the traffic's gone after the game. But if you're not one of those serious tailgaters, you get in that car, you can sit on Lakeshore Drive or whatever.
Easily, yeah.
The feeder ramp into the Stevenson. I mean, I've gone out of there immediately after a game, and it takes you every bit of an hour and a half on a trip that should take you 15 minutes. So sure. it's no easy task to get in and out of Soldier Field as it is now. So you have the Metro train leaving downtown to get you to an express train, get you to Arlington Park in literally 30, 35 minutes. And that infrastructure is there. And you have a number of expressways and major thoroughfares that are surround that place. So it makes sense. And I don't get the argument that it's less accessible out there than Soldier Field is now to anybody.
Let's go out to Rosemont, our guy Bob. Bob, what's going on today?
Good morning, fellas. Brian, you raise an excellent point from the stand. People who think that this is some sort of a negotiating ploy, I don't get it as you don't. You're right. What is there to get? The bottom line is, fundamentally, you've got a stadium there that doesn't have sufficient capacity for a Super Bowl, doesn't have capacity or the ability to be used year-round for indoor-type activities like the NCAA tournament, et cetera. You've got a rare opportunity in Arlington Heights to have a footprint already set up for you, probably properly zoned for this particular use. You've got infrastructure built in with Highway 53 nearby. You've got hotels. You've got a large enough footprint there that you essentially could even do something similar to what they have in Glendale with the State Farm Stadium in Phoenix, where they've got the entire playing surface on a rail, and they're able to have a natural grass surface and
roll
concrete floors. So exactly. So basically, when you're looking at the cost of construction, usually the biggest problem is finding a big enough piece of real estate that you don't have to condemn and take over from private landowners and all of that kind of thing, which essentially eliminates an alternate site in the city for all intents and purposes. And it's an opportunity that has fallen into the Bears' lap, and the fact that they've had the wisdom to take advantage of it, however it materializes, at least it shows some good common sense and an opportunity to build a state-of-the-art stadium that, will be accessible for all sorts of activities 12 months a year and open up a lot of business and tax opportunities and things of that nature that Soldier Field simply can't provide. No matter what your negotiations might be directed at, it's simply a move that has to be made. And when Mayor Lightfoot comes out and is critical of it, that's not exactly the smartest tack to take either. So I couldn't agree more with the strategy and what you're expressing about the logic behind it and the traffic issue. You correctly state it's a nightmare to get to that game. In Soldier Field, and I can't envision a scenario where an Arlington Heights location would be a bigger traffic snarl than what you currently find on Sundays at Soldier Field.
Bob, appreciate the call as always, and he's right. The traffic makes complete sense because anybody that's gone to Soldier Field knows it's tough getting in, tough getting out. You could wait forever. And Arlington Park has exits on both sides, correct? On the north and the south side of the facility with parking and everything else. Their parking lots are huge.
And not just talking about getting a Super Bowl. I mean, for the Bears, for the McCaskey family, it's getting 30,000 more seats for every home game and then those playoff games they envision having with Justin Fields, right?
Yeah.
It's about owning the concessions and the parking and everything and not splitting it with the Park District here in Chicago. It's talking about sponsorship, you know, naming rights, whatever it is. All the things that they have not made available to them with the agreement they currently have. And again, no one should cry for them. They agreed to it. They, you know, they got the best possible deal they thought they were going to get from then Mayor Daley. And they signed it, and that got Ted Phillips the presidency of the club, right? I mean, he was the guy who negotiated that, and then he was promoted to being president all these years later. So they signed it. They have to live with it, but I'm sure they have lawyers who could break that lease, maybe not from now until 2033, but it's going to take at least 4 or 5 years to get this thing, if it's reality, up and running. It won't take 10, but within 5, and then you negotiate the exit. You know, you cut a check to the city, and everyone moves on.
312-332-3776. Your thoughts on the Bears moving out to Arlington Heights? We got a couple of polls. We'll revisit those. Also, they're talking about, well, you can't be the Chicago Bears. Well, yeah, that's just ridiculous. We'll talk about that. We'll take your calls. 312-332-3776 here on ESPN 1000.